Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's seminar. We're honored to be speaking with Bob Zellner today, who has more than 50 years of experience doing grassroots multiracial organizing among the poor in the South. Bob is a veteran of the civil rights movement. He grew up in rural Alabama, the son and grandson of Ku Klux Klan members and ministers. And when Bob was a child, his father took the dangerous step of renouncing his Klan membership, a decision which had a profound effect on Bob, who went on to become the first white field secretary of SNCC in Mississippi. After SNCC became an all-black organization, Bob joined the staff of the Southern Conference Educational Fund, where with Ann Braden, Dottie Zellner, and others, Bob founded the GROW Project, the grassroots organizing work, aka Get Rid of Wallace. Today, Bob plays an important role in North Carolina's Forward Together Moral Mondays movement, mentoring young leaders and drawing on decades of his experience to help guide that effort. In the past 2 years, Bob, as part of the NAACP and the Forward Together Moral Mondays movement, has been playing a major role in the fight to save and reopen the hospital in Belhaven, North Carolina. The hospital was closed in 2014 by a private company, which claimed that it wasn't generating enough revenue. And it left the people there in Belhaven and near Belhaven without any hospitals or reliable emergency care. 6 days after its closure, Belhaven lost Portia Gibbs, a young mother who died of a heart attack in the parking lot waiting for a helicopter to take her to the nearest hospital, which was at that point 30 miles away. In 2014 and in 2015, Belhaven's mayor, Mayor Adam O'Neill, walked from North Carolina to Washington, D.C., 283 miles to raise awareness of the 283 rural hospitals that were scheduled for closures. Bob was with him the whole way. This walk last year brought together people from all over the country with a handful of people who walked the whole way with Mayor O'Neill and Bob. I was there as part of part of the Cairo Center's relay team and walked for about 50 miles of it from Richmond to Fredericksburg. And we were all moved by this small group's commitment, courage, and strength. This fight to save Belhaven's hospital is ongoing, and it's in a critical stage right now. Bob and local leaders, including Mayor O'Neill, have set up a tent encampment outside the hospital to defend it from a planned demolition. We'll be getting a history and an update on the struggle from Bob today, who's calling in from that location. With that, I will now hand it over to Bob.
Shelley, thank you so much. Thank you, everyone, for listening today and participating. We are here in front of the hospital in Belhaven, North Carolina, because we couldn't take enough time to get up to New York and do it the easy way. So we're doing it the organizing way. I'm here with a very good friend who is from Belhaven, has used this hospital, and Greg Stephen Ward. Greg Stephens Ward is a theology student here, and he's worked in Belhaven. He had an accident when he needed the hospital here. The hospital is no longer located here, and there are only four people that are keeping this hospital from reopening. The veterans have reserved enough beds in the hospital to make it a financial success. The whole town and the county of Beaufort and the county of Hyde County are waiting for the hospital to reopen. And we're waiting for these four people who call themselves the managers of the LLC to relinquish the building, give it back to the people who paid for it, and have it open and change the health and the economy of this entire area. Now, before we go too much further, and I want to hear from Greg later on about the local situation. But I wanted to give an overview of this kind of organizing. Luckily, I've been able to do this kind of organizing for over 50 years. Growing up in Alabama, Daddy in the Ku Klux Klan, Granddaddy in the Ku Klux Klan, I was very lucky to go to our church school in Montgomery, Alabama, Huntingdon College, where I met Dr. King and Mrs. Rosa Parks and E.D. Nixon and the people who made the Montgomery bus boycott. And they started me on a life of crime. I graduated in 61 after having some experiences with the Freedom Riders and the sit-inners to join SNCC, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. In the first 36 months of my work with SNCC, six of my colleagues were murdered by racists. They were lynched because we were working to get African Americans registered to vote in the Deep South. That tradition has lived on through Dr. King and the Poor People's Campaign, which is being revived now. We consider ourselves part of the Poor People's Campaign. And our encampment here at the hospital in Belhaven, North Carolina, where we have a strong coalition between white and black, old and young, gay and straight, native North Carolinians and people who've come down from the north. We have a huge coalition to reopen this hospital. But in order to do that, we have to have a 24-hour guard around the building now to keep them from tearing down the building. They're so determined that this hospital will not reopen. Now, we know that one of the reasons that they are so intent on keeping Mayor Adam O'Neill and the people here from allowing Camp Resurrection, which we've set up over here and we'll show it to you in a little bit, our tent city. They are so intent on not allowing us to reopen the hospital. And the reason is that Belhaven has become a national and certainly a state symbol of saving rural hospitals. And the big corporations know that if we can win in Belhaven, we can get the other 283 hospitals and communities to fight to keep their hospitals from closing, or if they have closed, to fight to reopen them. And we'll win this fight because the people's power is greater than the wealth and the 1%. It's very instructive that the movement here in Belhaven, led by Mayor O'Neill, a white Republican mayor of this town, and Reverend William Barber, the black leader of the Forward Together Moral Fusion movement in North Carolina that's now spreading nationwide and worldwide, it's very fitting that they work together here in Belhaven because it's become a symbol of the kind of fusion politics that will save our country from the 1%. It's very important to know that the four people and the 25 people in this town that support them, it's down to that little nub. Now, I think it's safe to say they're all white and they're all extremely wealthy and they're used to getting their way. They are the 1% of the 1%, and they're used to running things. It's a clique, and they got used to it, and they cannot believe that a ragtag bunch of black and white people camping out here next to the hospital is going to be able to reopen the hospital, but we're going to prove that it can happen because the people's power is very important. One other thing that I want to point out too about movement organizing, and I know I'm talking to a lot of good organizers around the country, and I only use this as an example of organizing principles, but the current election in the United States is basically an election between are we going to go forward together, or are we going to turn backwards and become narrow and build walls and divisions between people, or are we once and for all going to do away with those divisions and those walls and build bridges between people? Now, we're all part of what is known as the progressive movement. Some of us are leftists, and we worked on this for many, many years. We all also are very familiar with the left always being absolutely clear that race and all of its implications is still at the center of the struggle in the United States. And when Bernie began to run and to begin to show that there's a huge groundswell of support for radical revolutionary change, He had to be reminded of the central role that race plays. Homophobia plays a huge part. The anti-gay movement, the anti-women's things, anti-immigrants, nativism, xenophobia, all those things were important. But our history in this country has race always at the center. And one of the reasons that the 1% can claim to represent the working class is that a lot of the white working class has bought the racial line of the Tea Parties and the 1%. And they've been convinced to vote against their own economic interest, basically on race. It always comes back to that. We have a situation in this country now where politics and everything is turned on its head. Here in Beaufort County, for instance, the Democrats don't support opening up the hospital. The United Methodist Church here, a very strong institution in Belhaven, the church seems to be supporting Reverend Noble, who is a Methodist minister. He's been encouraging all of the forces that want to keep the hospital closed, and he's been working against reopening the hospital. And now this is a clergyman, a United Methodist minister, who had a reputation of being a progressive, being a God-fearing, Jesus-loving man. And he is now supporting keeping the hospital closed. The irony is, not only is he a minister of the gospel of Jesus Christ, but he died. He had a heart attack when he was 46 years old, the minister of the Methodist Church here in Belhaven. On the way to the hospital, which was two blocks away, when he got to the hospital, he had no vital signs remaining. He was dead. This hospital right here over my shoulder worked on him for half an hour in an ice bath to get his heart working again. They got him back together. They nursed him back to full health, and he's back at that same church serving his congregation and working as hard as he can to keep this hospital closed. You couldn't write a story like this if your name was Shakespeare. The very idea that Democrats in Belhaven and in Beaufort County would support keeping the hospital closed instead of opening it has got its head turned upside down. The Democratic Party nationally, that used to pride itself in representing the working class, now never says anything about the working class or poverty. They talk about protecting the middle class. And they don't have the support of working people. Working people, for some reason, are more likely to vote, of course, for Bernie, because the ones that are intelligent enough know that Bernie is definitely for the working people. But many of them would vote for Trump. Trump is a billionaire. And the very idea that they would vote Republican, which is a party historically that supports super rich people, and heavily supported by working people, it doesn't make any sense, class. And the reason it doesn't make sense is that white people have been sold a bill of goods over and over and over again to support their program, which is detrimental to their own economic well-being and now their actual physical well-being here. So you have a community that's divided, it's not divided down the middle. The overwhelming majority of the people in this community support reopening a hospital. Four individuals, which we name all the time, Brantley Tillman, Lynn Ross, Deborah Sparrow, and Daryl Armstrong. Did I get them all right? Got all those that right. We now have their names posted out on the street next to Resurrection Camp Resurrection. Their names are posted there because there are four individuals that are keeping this hospital from being returned. Now, and I'm going to ask Greg to say some words about the local situation, and we'll have a general discussion. One of the burdens of my situation as an organizer is that I have said that people on the left and the progressive community have always talked a good line about working with black and white, uniting and fight. But the last thing that many of us want to do as progressives or as leftists is to actually work with the large number of white people who are racist. That's our job as white people, to do anti-racism work. And we can't just do it amongst ourselves. So that's why we're asking for people to talk to Bernie Sanders, talk to other people on the left, and say, we have to have a multi-year, well-financed, well-planned organizing effort for white Southerners who are poor and working class. And what goes for white Southerners goes to white people all over this country, and wean them away from an economic program that hurts them, voting in favor of the top 1% of the 1%. We have the consciousness to do it now. Do we have the will to do it? And I think we do. What's happening in Belhaven is so, so important. And we're having a lot of difficulty getting support, not only from the movement here in North Carolina, but we're getting a lot of difficulty getting support from around the country. Come to Belhaven, do an internship for the summer. Bring your sleeping bag, bring your tents. One tent is going to be two tents, and two tents are going to be three. We'll stay in this tent city, Camp Resurrection, until this hospital is reopened. Is that a good idea? Is that a something that's happening here in Belhaven? Could you move a little closer so people can hear?
That is a great idea, because number one, we actually need this hospital. And without even saying it, it's a matter of life and death. If we lose the little bit of hospital that we do have, yes, we have a urgent care, or what they would call, or what have you believe, is an urgent care, which is a little bit over top of a Band-Aid, okay? The response there to any emergency solution or situation is that the solution is that we stabilize them real, real quick if they have the technology there to do it. And I do say if, because normally they don't. And then once you stabilize them, transport them as quickly as possible up to Washington or Greenville. Well, Washington is most of the time out of the question, because the emergency situation there is 4 to 8 hours that you're going to sit there waiting. And if anybody comes in with a little worse than you are, then you get bumped back. So you're unsure. Okay. And then Greenville is 65 miles.
And they're talking about trying to close the hospital in Washington. And it's already 75 miles between hospitals. If they close the hospital in Washington, it's more important for this hospital to open up, because I think Hyde County is the largest, poorest county in North Carolina, and they don't even have one single doctor there.
Not even a clinic.
Not even a clinic. Everybody there depends on this hospital or way out to dying, literally, because this hospital closed up.
Yes, sir. And it's so sad to know that I was born and raised here, and my whole family went to this hospital. My mother worked in this hospital, okay? And when I had my emergency, which is totally on a personal level, they were there for me. Yes, they only stabilized me and cleaned my wound and everything, but they got me transport ready to go to wherever I had to go to. And I think I could have bled to death if the situation would have been left in the open to where I didn't have that response. So it is very, very important to me that we get this hospital back.
One of the things I'd like to ask a lot of people to do, since this is a theology class as such, this is a social gospel, what Jesus said, to take care of poor people, sick people, people in prison. I wish people would contact Hope Morgan Ward. Bishop Hope Morgan Ward is our United Methodist Church bishop in this part of North Carolina. And she is a very progressive person. And we think that their power is so immense that they have quieted down the bishop. The bishop actually sent the district superintendent, and all the Methodists on this line will understand how important that is. The bishop and the district superintendent are about the two most powerful people in the world when it comes to a local pastor like Chris Noble. He's not being very noble. And we asked the bishop to ask the district superintendent to come and talk to Reverend Noble about at least stopping his opposition, his public opposition to the hospital. And the district superintendent came down and wound up embracing Reverend Noble. So they weren't even able to transfer a message that he's not doing a good job. So if I could get six people around the country to call Bishop Hope Morgan Ward of the United Methodist Church here in North Carolina, that would be a really good example to have a local minister who actually gets corrected by the good people in the conference. I was speaking just the other day, Saturday before last, to the Jack Crum Social Action Conference of the Methodist Church here in North Carolina. And I spoke about the situation here that we had a church, United Methodist Church, that appeared to be supporting the forces that want to keep the hospital closed. And I asked them to call the bishop and call the minister, and many of them knew him personally. They could not understand why they were against the hospital, especially since his life was saved. So we need help. And I spoke to all of the social action professionals in North Carolina. About 3 weeks before that, I spent 3 days on a retreat with the bishop and 15 Methodist ministers from North Carolina who are concerned about social action. And we had a press conference here Saturday, and we asked the clergy to come. Not one single clergy came from anywhere for our press conference. We had three people from Hyde County, and we had everybody from Belhaven. We're not getting support that we need from people who say they're concerned. So even when they say they'll do something, it's hard to get them to do it. So the last point that I'll make before we open for questions and comments is, as activists, we have to understand that there's only a tiny fraction of people who will actually take a risk and take an action. When I first met Mrs. Rosa Parks, very soon after that, I met Dr. Martin Luther King. Workshop at Dr. King's church, well, actually Reverend Abernathy's church in Montgomery, Alabama. Dr. King had told the five of us students from Huntington College, if you come to the church, you're welcome to come. It's a nonviolent workshop and we need you, but be prepared to be arrested. Well, at the end of the meeting, Dr. King came and said, the church is surrounded. They've sent word that the five of you students are going to be arrested. And Dr. King smiled. And I wondered, why would he smile at being arrested? He knew that would get us into the movement. But I said, well, Dr. King, we need to escape. We don't want to get our church in trouble. We don't want to get our school in trouble. We don't want to get our parents in trouble. He said, well, I'll go out the front door, and Mrs. Parks and Reverend Abernathy can take you to the basement. There's a back door, and you can run for it if they all come around when I come out. Sure enough, as we were waiting, Mrs. Parks turned to me, and she said, Bob, and she touched me on this elbow. And I haven't washed that elbow since then, being touched by St. Rosa Parks. And she said, when you see something wrong, you have to take action. You cannot study it forever. So we're asking people to take action. That's what got me in the movement, and that's what will get people in the movement. And I found out one thing about white Southerners. It's for brotherhood and sisterhood. They become real, real strong supporters because they've taken a risk and they have paid a price. It's like Jesus in the early days. You could be murdered and killed just for being a Christian. And now we can't get Christians even to call up a local minister and ask them to do the right thing. So far from risking their lives, they won't even risk their careers. So that's the challenge that I'll put to you. How can you help us here? And how can you do what Daniel and the rest of them are doing in Pennsylvania, and we're doing in the Poor People's Campaign, organizing all over the country? We need help, but don't come away if you need, or you're needed in your local community. But work there and come help us too. Do we go to questions, Colleen?
Yes, let's do questions now. Thank you so much for that initial update on the work that y'all are doing and the terrible situation, and really appreciate y'all being able to speak to us from location and give us a glimpse into the fight that y'all are waging and the justice that is being denied there. So Mrs. Monroe says, I'm with Put People First Pennsylvania. I can commit to calling Bishop Hope Morgan Ward. I find it very admirable that you've set up camp and commit to staying until the hospital is reopened.
I see they just pulled a guard dog up over there.
Oh, yeah.
So Larry Cox from the Cairo Center just asked.
I know Larry.
Yeah, you know. He just said, you know, in addition to contacting the bishop, what else can folks do? You know, what do you want folks to come there? What would be the timeline on that? What are other concrete actions that people can take to support you?
Thank you, Larry Cox. Good, practical question. Donations to the Pungo, you know, I should have known the exact Pungo Medical Center. And if you email me, I'll send you the exact address where and how to make out checks. We need contributions, but we also need visitations right here to Belhaven. And we also have, my house is in Wilson, North Carolina. It's just getting fixed up as the Baker Organizing School South, or BOSS, Baker Organizing School South, to help with the Poor People's Campaign. And we can put up people there. We have lots of places we can put people up here in Belhaven. So we need people to bring sleeping bags, warm clothes. It's still a little cool in the spring. The last two nights have been very cold here and lots of wind. So sleeping bags, warm clothes, food, and communication equipment. If someone comes here, as Victoria Sprong did last year, they can help us with a lot of publicity around the country.
Bring your tent.
And bring a tent if you can. Yes, if you're driving down or whatever, and you can bring a tent. I finally got my foam rubber mattress last night, and so I was able to sleep all night for the first night since I've been here. So keep people coming, and I know that Shally can testify, and Larry also, and Daniel. So many of the people from the Cairo Center and the Poverty Initiative have come down to help us. They'll tell you it's life-changing and it'll do your soul good. And you can lose weight, too.
So Jason Shank of Elkhart, Indiana, has a question. What do we know about the situation of other rural hospitals across the country? Have many others closed, or have you been in conversation with others?
Yes, that's a very good question also. Lewisburg, North Carolina, which is just northeast of the Raleigh-Durham area, has just closed. They called Mayor Adam and Mayor Adam's mother, Pam, who was with us on all the walks, went over there as organizers. They're asking now Mayor O'Neill and the other people here in Belhaven to help in a lot of other situations. So we know of hospital after hospital after hospital that they're closing those hospitals, and they're trying to put up clinics that they call critical care or whatever. And that's not the same as a hospital with an emergency room. So in Lewisburg, they're closed up the hospital. They're asking us to help. They're 283 at last count and probably rising all over the country, a tremendous number of them in the South. And that question also brings up another political question. The absolute obscenity that representatives at the national level and the state level, congressmen and senators, the ones from the poorest areas where they need the expansion of Medicaid, where they need rural hospitals. Those are exactly the representatives who are most likely to vote against extending Medicaid, vote against keeping their local hospital. Things are turned on their heads, and that's why we need a revolution like Dr. King called for. Revolution is in the air. That's why I say support the insurgent candidates. Don't, especially in the primaries, support establishment candidates. The insurgent candidates need our help as organizers, as revolutionaries. And then when they wind up with some other establishment candidate, we have to support them probably. But in the meantime, support revolution, because we have to turn things back again. Representatives in poor areas should not be the ones that are most likely to vote against poor people.
That's so true.
So I want to read three related comments and then have get y'all's response. One comes from Aaron Scott from Chaplains on the Harbor in rural Grays Harbor County, Washington. And Aaron's,
oh, good. I know that group.
Yeah. And so Aaron says, our hospital in Aberdeen, last heard, has filed for bankruptcy due to mismanagement as well. And it's still open for now, but definitely tenuous. Danielle Monroe from Put People First Pennsylvania asks, where can I find info on the hospital itself as to do some research and possibly create a letter to the editor? And is there a GoFundMe page? And then that, let's hold that question. And then also Tony Prince relatedly wants more information. Tony Prince is from California and says, what was the justification for closing the hospital? Was it a government action that closed it? And with regard to the woman who died, have there been other cases of people who have suffered harm from medical help being unavailable?
Okay, we'll start with the last one first. The most one of the most recent horrendous cases was a 16-year-old boy that got run over by farm equipment. He was 5 minutes from this hospital, and before they could get a helicopter there, he was 5 minutes from this hospital, and he was laid in the field for 45 minutes where he could have been brought to this hospital. He laid in the field waiting for the helicopter. And this funny thing about it was that when the helicopter got there, they said, we can't take him. He's not stable enough. So an emergency helicopter can't take you if you're severely injured, apparently. So all of these things are lies to the people. And many patients that want to close a hospital will deliberately mismanage the hospital, which they did here at the Bellhaven. When Vidant took over, they needed 50 people to work there, and they had over 100 people to work there. They charged a lot of expenses that came from other places and other hospitals to this hospital to try to show that it lost a lot of money. It was all fraudulent. So sometimes,
they rerouted the money-making processes here to other places that they own in order to fraudulently, and I do mean fraudulently, just make this place go away, okay, so that we would have to send everybody up to Washington or Greenville, North Carolina, to their other places. I mean, and the way it looked like is that they did it so deliberate that this was a chain reaction that's going to end up happening all over the country. It's something that they were preparing for all along. Each time that they would run into an obstacle, they would lie their way out of it in order to justify what was happening.
They were given this hospital on the basis that they would maintain and strengthen the emergency services and the health services in this hospital. And they admitted later when they're during cross-examination that they bought the hospital with the intention. And they said that the LLC here understood, Reverend Boyette understood that they were going to close the hospital when they not bought the hospital, they were given this hospital. They were given this hospital, and they said they everybody understood from the beginning that they were going to close the hospital. Why would somebody close a Hilberton Hospital, the first one ever built in this United States in 1947, that has withstood right here on the water? It's never been destroyed by a hurricane. It's never been destroyed by a tornado. It's never been destroyed by a flood. It's never been destroyed by anything. And now a corporation can come in with the intention of closing the hospital, and they can close this hospital. The year they closed this hospital, 2 years ago, they made $110 million, Vidant Health Corporation. And they are a nonprofit health corporation. And they had a $700 million reserve fund. The CEO made $2 million the year they said this hospital lost $1 million, so they were going to close it. It's a criminal and a fraudulent exercise from the very beginning. And the four people that are now standing in the way of reopening this hospital, they know that. They understand that. They are so hateful that when we said we were going to have a 24-hour picket to save the hospital, they got in touch with contractors and asked for bids on demolishing the hospital. All the contractors, some of them reported directly to us. And then the next day when we had, or a few days later when we had the press conference, they said publicly, we have no intention to demolish the hospital. So all of those contractors know that they're lying. So in all of the places where they say that the hospital is failing, you better look into it, because they may intend to close that hospital to make more money somewhere else. And these are nonprofit health organizations. It's a shame, it's a crime, and it has to be stopped by people power. We haven't been helped basically by any legal maneuver that we've been able to do. Only thing that keeps this hospital up, and the only reason it's survived so far, is because the people are behind protecting the hospital, not the law.
Wow. Bob, could you say a little bit about where some of this, and is there a place where this is written, like that folks could share? And hopefully we'll be able to share the webinar from today, but in terms of this offer to write a letter to the editor from Danielle in Pennsylvania, where could people go?
Well, because of the two walks, actually we had three walks, because, you know, we all walked this past June from here in Belhaven to Washington, D.C. And then in July, in the very hot weather, Adam O'Neill, the white Republican mayor of Belhaven, North Carolina, and Hood Richardson, the Republican county commissioner, and myself and other people walked here from Belhaven to Raleigh, North Carolina. So that's how we've done those things. Anybody that wants information about this can contact the website of the here in Belhaven. If you email me, we'll give you all of those connection contacts. You can also Google any information about Belhaven, the walking mayor. There's thousands and thousands of words and pictures and history about this situation. The legislature in Raleigh, the most right wing in the whole country, was forced to change its mind and give them the certificate of occupant, certificate of need that for this hospital. And the good thing about it was, when we won it for this hospital, we won it for every hospital in North Carolina that has closed. You have 3 years and you don't have to get another certificate of need. They were saying that if the hospital closed, that's it. You have to get a whole new certificate of need, which takes years and millions of dollars. So just the walk there won that right for here. So anybody that has any difficulty getting as much information as you can possibly stand about this situation, let me know. It's all over Google. It's all over the newspapers. Washington Post, many of them haven't covered it very much, but some have.
We had coverage the other day when we opened up. Yeah, we had coverage the other day when we opened up with our little conference of opening our camp. And it just seemed like the media, they actually weren't there. It wasn't a great presence. It seemed like the ones that they actually send to our press coverage are ones that really don't want to have a positive effect on anything that we're doing. They really don't want to report on the criminal intent that is actually going on here, okay? Which I think that the criminal intent that is actually going on here is that it's a cover-up. As long as the rest of the public don't get a chance to see exactly what their agenda is, then it's fine with them. But now, since we've opened up this camp, it just seems like that everybody and his brother rides by and just looks at us in a way, instead of stopping, because, I mean, the neighborly thing to do would be to stop and, you know.
And say, how can I help?
Right. Either that or, ask the questions if they're not informed. And we apologize today that we're not in that informed category that we could actually give you all the websites straight up and telephone numbers as you're asking for them. But like Mr. Bob said, that as soon as you get a chance to Google us, and the information is readily available.
Yeah, the Washington paper had pictures, and they had, I think, a pretty good article actually on the Saturday press conference. So, what's the name of the Washington paper?
I didn't get it.
The Washington Daily, and then Greenville. Now, the problem is, of course, that Vidant is extremely a big employer in Greenville, North Carolina, and in Washington, North Carolina. And those newspapers have been very reluctant to cover anything that's not national news. If we make national news in Belhaven, they're forced to cover it. Otherwise, they won't cover it because they're afraid to alienate Biden. That gives them probably, they're the biggest advertisers in these papers. So you understand that politics. But Google these newspapers, and also the Raleigh News and Observer in Raleigh, North Carolina. They have a huge backlog of information on the struggle in Belhaven to save this hospital, and then when it was closed, to reopen the hospital.
The Washington Daily News is the Washington newspaper.
Washington Daily News.
Washington Daily News. And the reason I said I didn't know, because right then, at the minute, it just the one that they sent to interview was a new person. They weren't really normally affiliated with them, or we hadn't seen her in that context down here.
But do Google that article. It has pictures and everything of our signs. We have nonviolent workshops here, people, of 100, sometimes 125 people. And 50 to 60% of them are white Southerners in these nonviolent workshops. We're having, we're reenacting lunch counter sit-ins, marches, and all the things that we used to do in SNCC. We're doing right here in North Carolina. It's the best example of local grassroots organizing and fusion politics in the whole country. And we can't get our movement to seem to understand that here in North Carolina, to put more resources and more people in here. We're going to go ahead, but we could do a lot better with a lot more help. Thank you.
Thanks, y'all. And then Michelle Reif, hope I'm pronouncing that right, is reminding us that there's, in the email with the announcing today's web, once you signed up for today's webinar, there were links to a couple of articles on the Cairo Center site that includes information. Like, there was a interview with Bob Zellner, and then an article about the march last year. So those are sources as well.
Oh, no.
So Bob, here's a question from Larry Cox.
Thank you, sir. Yes.
A question from Larry Cox. He's curious about this Methodist pastor that is, yeah, was saved, his life was saved by the hospital, but now is in opposition to the hospital. How does he justify that? What does he say when he's saying that he is not supporting this effort?
Well, it is an interesting situation, because in his church, not only did Reverend Chris Noble have Dr. Boyette in his congregation. Dr. Boyette and Adam O'Neill are the two main people who've been fighting to reopen the hospital. He's one of his own parishioners. He himself had his life saved by this hospital. On Saturday, a couple of Saturdays ago, Dr. Boyette himself, Country Doctor of the Year, the most distinguished resident of Belhaven, North Carolina, had a heart attack. He's two blocks from the hospital. We don't know if the hospital would have been able to save Dr. Boyette. But Dr. Boyette died by the time he got to Washington, by the time he went to the other hospital, 30 miles away. He died. He did not survive. So here is Reverend Noble, United Methodist Church pastor, pastoring the main, one of the main line establishment, rich white churches in Belhaven, preaches the sermon for his parishioner, Dr. Boyette. He also has two other members of his church who are very wealthy and powerful, members of the LLC who won't give the hospital back. Immediately after the funeral, he criticized Adam for mentioning the four managers. And Reverend Noble said, when you started talking about the managers, Mayor Adam, I almost made you sit down. And he said, I now understand what you and Dr. Boyette had in common. You both drive an issue into the ground and alienate everybody. And he said, you can't bully my church members into giving the hospital back. You can't write this kind of stuff. There's the body of Dr. Boyette standing next to the preacher who has just preached his funeral, and he's embarrassing all of Dr. Boyette's family by criticizing Adam for trying to reopen the hospital. Now, you have to have a tremendous amount of power to turn around a preacher like that, because he began supporting the reopening of the hospital, which his parishioner was trying to open and which had saved his life. But when those people with all of that money and that power said, we will withdraw our money from your church, I suppose that's what they said, and we will make your life miserable, he changed his tune. And when he did, he felt so badly about it, he became very, very strong for keeping the hospital closed. Now, Larry, you are a Christian and you are a theologian. I can't explain that to myself, but maybe you can explain that. I don't know.
It is remarkable. So there's a question from Jason in Indiana, and he's with Tim from California. And they ask, Bob, can you tell us more about how this fusion movement is similar to or different than what you experienced with SNCC and GROW?
Yes, I can. Thank you. It's a good question. One of the things that's unique about the fusion movement is, number one, it's been organized for 8 to 10 years already by Reverend Barber and Al McShirley, who is an old movement organizer, worked on the Poor People's Campaign with me and Dr. King. In this fusion movement, we have pulled together 200 organizations around North Carolina: labor, faith, education, health, every conceivable thing, environment, climate, green fuel, every single group, voter rights, gay rights, a huge LGBTQ movement here in North Carolina. We've pulled everybody together. So instead of working in your silo on gay issues, or in your silo on voter rights, or your silo on green power or climate, everybody works together. So everybody supports every other issue. And sometimes a person working on LGBTQ struggles will talk about the need for the expansion of Medicaid. Somebody working on Medicaid or healthcare will talk about women's rights. Somebody else working on women's rights will talk about the move against voters, restricting voter registration in North Carolina. That's the way you do fusion politics. You also do it with gay and straight and old and young and native and immigrants, and you pull together everybody who has a progressive agenda, not on the basis of Democrat and Republican, or even right or left, but on the basis of doing the right thing, the moral thing. And we work with a lot of atheists. We work with every religion under the sun here in North Carolina. The mosque, the temple, the church, everybody works together. That's the way you have a fusion movement. And people power is the only thing that can overcome the power of the extremely wealthy people who are an oligarchy now. This is a revolutionary situation where over 25 or 30 years, we have stripped the middle class, the working class, and poor people of all of their money. Most of the recovery money in this country has gone to the upper 1% of the 1%. It's the most ridiculous situation. Economists all over the world have said the United States is no longer a democracy. We don't even have habeas corpus anymore because of terrorism and the right-wing turn. So we now have an oligarchy, not a democracy, and we need our democracy back. Social democracy is a good thing. Bernie has been able to say we need to consider other economic systems, and socialism is okay to talk about now in public. That's a tremendous achievement. I'm sorry, I had a sermon on that one.
It's a good sermon. I wish
well,
all my,
thank you know, all very
what my sermons were on Sunday. So okay. Thank you for joining us. If there aren't other questions, I think we'll let you get back to the out of the sun, and it sounds like you got lunch coming. But
well, also email us, Facebook us, let us do whatever necessary to get you down here. Even if it's for a couple of weeks, you can stay right here on this beautiful harbor. We've got we're in La La Land, and we're doing it on nothing. So bring some change so that you can afford to have food around the corner. Okay.
All right. Well, thank you for the work that you're doing. Oh, do you mind panning around and showing us the camp?
Oh, yes. Good. Yeah, I'm glad you reminded me of that. Okay, here we go. I'm unplugging you, but I think you're plugged in. Can you see it?
I can see it. We can see
it. Wrench?
For those those who are not on video, there's you're calling it Camp Resurrection. Is that right?
Camp Resurrection, save our hospital, absolutely.
And our thoughts and prayers are with you. And
and it's in honor of Martin Luther King and resurrection.
And it is very much part of the resurrection of the Poor People's Campaign. And so I know that lots of us here are ready to be in support, and we appreciate the ways that you've pointed us so that we can be a part of this effort.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thanks to you both, and to everyone that's at the camp right now. And let's continue to be in touch.
Okay. Love your work. Thank you so much.
Thank you, everyone. Looking forward to the next time we're together.